Thank you for joining us for this episode of Journey Now, produced by Journey Church in Brentwood, Tennessee. For more information on Journey Church and our gatherings, visit journeytn.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Monday. My name is Mike, host of the appropriately titled Mike Mondays, where we talk about mysteries and ambiguities and tension and questions we have about our faith. And I'm joined today by my friend Susie Lind, who not only is a pastor and elder at Journey Church, but is a friend. And she said something to me that prompted this episode, which is, hey, Mike, why don't you share about your doubts? And we thought that was a good idea since I'm kind of a newer addition to the team. And so Susie is going to kind of host this episode. And if you'll indulge me a little bit, Journey audience, I'd love to share a bit about my story into being curious about all the things we talk about on this show. So Susie, welcome.
Thanks for letting me take over.
Take it, Susie. You know how this goes.
Oh, I'm so excited. Well, this is really great.
Well, Susie, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But
it's really great. I mean, so let me just start by saying, you and I have now been friends for just a few months, right?
Correct.
But when I lived in California and was, you know, doing some on-the-job training, if you will, thrown into the fire of church ministry.
Yes, indeed.
I think I was doing women's ministry at the time, and I didn't know what I was doing, but they put me in charge of something that I didn't even know that I even liked, much less wanted to lead.
Yeah.
So I started doing some research through other churches, just seeing what other churches do, what they're like, how they reach women, how they're discipling women. And I came across this church called Rock Harbor. Mm. And there was a teaching pastor there that I thought I should listen to just to see what kind of church it was, to make sure it wasn't weird or anything.
Totally.
And that's totally when I discovered Mike Erie. And you were kind of like my every once in a while, like when I needed a voice outside of my own vortex that I was in, I would listen to your messages at Rock Harbor. And then a little bit of the Vox when you started that and everything. And So like, I've kind of loosely from afar watched your journey. And so this is exciting because I know it hasn't been smooth.
Yes, it's not been smooth, but glorious.
Yeah. And knowing a little bit about your previous churches that you've been part of, they're wonderful places. They're awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, every time you move to a different context, your faith sort of shifts and takes on different.
That's right.
Different things. I don't know if I would call it characteristics or anything, but you learn things differently. You learn a different language.
Yes.
You see God differently just based on the people that you're with. Right.
Right. Right.
And then you throw in like what you're going through in your own life.
Yes.
And how that changes things. So I'm super excited for people to hear a little bit more about your faith journey. So why don't you start by telling us what your inherited faith
is? Oh, no, that's my question. You know, my parents divorced when I was 9. Mm-hmm. And as a result, my dad started taking us to church on Sunday mornings. And like any, you know, 9, 10-year-old, when you're told hell is real, it's forever, mm-hmm. and there's fire there, but you could pray this prayer and not go there. Well, of course, I'm going to pray this prayer.
Yeah.
And then when you hit adolescence and realize that girls go to this place called church also, mm-hmm. that whole scene became, and I always had a God awareness. I always believed. There was never a moment in my life when I didn't believe in God. There have been lots of moments where I've wondered about other things, but never that. And so I grew into just kind of a good moral kid, church going, but with very mixed motives, mm-hmm. you know, kind of background. And
is this in Ohio, by the way?
This is this is in Lexington, Ohio.
Okay.
Big metropolis of about 3,000 people. Mm-hmm. And the church I was in was very, very conservative. I mean, it was like we did literal foot washing 4 times a year.
Oh, wow.
Literal. Like we did the feet.
Like whose feet did you wash?
Whoever was behind me in line.
Oh, so it wasn't like you didn't have to like go and ask somebody, can I wash your feet? It was a random person.
Yeah. So what happened was you would separate men and women, and the men would, I'm foggy on it because I was so young, but we would have some sort of talk, and then you'd all take your shoes off, and then you would stand in line, and the person in front of you would wash your feet, and you would wash the person behind, you know, your feet. Well, these days, yep. Back then, I don't even think we changed the water.
What denomination was it?
This was called Grace Brethren.
Okay.
And super conservative. I mean, I remember when I think I was home for college, and somebody raised their hands in the middle of a worship song, and the elders had to meet about this. My youth pastor got fired because he was making a point about God doesn't care what you wear at church. And so he had a suit on, and he took his suit off, and he was dressed in shorts and a t-shirt, and he got fired that day.
He was wearing shorts and a t-shirt or because?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Wow.
So, I mean, this was but it's all I knew. And like all of us, you know, you come to reckon with that inherited faith down the road. But
do you remember what you thought when that youth pastor got fired for that? Like, do you remember anything about what impression that made upon you at the time?
Well, it just confirmed that church was an esoteric place that didn't ever interact with real life.
Okay.
Because we never talked about sex. We never talked about money, except in the tithing sense. We never talked about real issues. Mm-hmm. The only sex talk I had was from a guy who was a youth volunteer who I didn't know well, pulled me into a room and took out a pamphlet and went over something called the biological hand grenade ladder. And so it was a ladder of different activities that started with holding hands all the way, you know, to the big stuff. And the idea was every rung you climbed, the consequences were more explosive. And so it just confirmed that God's important, but God isn't at all interested or relevant to the inner workings of a teenage boy. Mm-hmm. And it added to what I've now learned, you know, it's just this great deal of shame church is a place where you pretend. Mm-hmm. And whoever pretends the best gets to lead it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's
you know true. What I mean? Mm-hmm. So for me, and it wasn't until college that sort of superficial, shallow faith, I came across, I just kind of thought everyone was a Christian, right? Because we're Americans.
Did you go to a Christian college?
I did not. No, okay. Thankfully. I went to Miami of Ohio.
Okay.
And I remember my freshman year sitting with guys. We're just having these late night classic college talks. And they're like, we don't believe this. And this is bogus. And I'm like, what? And they're pointing out stuff I'd never thought about. And it wasn't until I took a philosophy class my sophomore year. And I had a Jewish, he was an agnostic Jew, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So culturally Jewish, and his Jewishness was very important to him, but he was an agnostic in the sense that he didn't think you could know whether or not there was a God.
Okay.
He was not at all antagonistic, and I took to philosophy it was living water, man. I loved it. And so we just became friends. And we're going over the classic arguments in philosophy of religion about God and evil. And we go out to dinner one night. I mean, we just, like, he was this older guy. He was so kind. And so I asked him, just with all the naivete of a college sophomore, so why aren't you a Christian? what, you know? And he was, and he hesitated forever, but I kept bugging him about it. And then we're out to dinner one night, and he just gently, with all kindness and with great hesitation, began to point out all of the things that I had, the church had never pointed out about itself or about its Bible or its message. And I mean, I just remember one line. He was like, "Mike, you're too smart to believe in a talking snake."
Oh, wow.
And, you know, he brought up the Holocaust. He just brought, I mean, he's just, if you really look out at the world, how do you conclude there's anything but ambivalence? Mm-hmm. Even if something supernatural existed, how can you not help but conclude it is the polar opposites of good and evil that exist both together? You know, I mean, and he was just beautiful.
Are you still friends with him?
Oh, I don't think I've seen him since college. That didn't, I mean, yes, we were friends after that, but after college, you know, I mean, how do you, keep up with your old profs, but it was so kind. And it was like, oh, it was like waking up to, cause no one had ever told me before, hey, the Bible contradicts itself. If you don't believe in Jesus, you're going to hell and you're going to be tortured forever for that unbelief. And I mean, I was just like, oh my goodness. So my faith had been so shallow and sheltered that none of those really big questions had ever arisen.
So what did that do for you then? Like, did it just feed your curiosity or did it?
Yes.
Like, just, yeah. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the great gift, Susie, of my life has been, I've been able in my profession to be eternally curious. Mm. I think that is a very neglected spiritual discipline.
Well, that is a gift as to you as one who teaches the Bible and pastors people, but it's an even greater gift to those who get to serve with you and be with you in your leadership, because
well, I hope so.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Like, it would suck to have a guy teaching you who didn't have any curiosity anymore. Thought he figured it all out.
Totally. And that's where, you know, like the reason I'm a Bible teacher is because I have so many questions about it. I have so many questions. And the deeper I get into it, the more dazzling it is. And yet the more mystifying it is. It's both simultaneously always. And so I began,
Did you major in philosophy at that school?
No, okay. Minored.
Okay.
Minored. Finance was my major.
And then from there you went on to?
Being an investment banker.
Oh.
Yeah. I was.
Okay. You got to talk about that because at some point you went to seminary. Like, what was that road?
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, that was super interesting because so not shockingly, there was a divergence between my public profession and my private sexual ethics.
Okay.
And I had decided to, you know, I was a part of purity culture, and so I was committed to not having sex, but the big gray area was wide open, and and so I graduated college. I still had loads of questions. Mm-hmm. I learned about C.S. Lewis. And so I began to wrestle with, oh, there's answers to some of this. Mm-hmm. I was still very motivated by success and career. And so I wanted to be, when I was 5 or 6, I said I wanted to be a stockbroker. So I went into finance and did really well. The thing, and this is, oh, God is just so relentless, because I was hired by a Christian guy, and so I did the Christian act, you know, for sure. And to my mind, I was a Christian. I believed the right things, and I didn't do all the horrible stuff, but there was certainly not an integration.
Yeah, it's so interesting that when you say you were a Christian, you immediately talk about what your behavior was like.
Totally. Well, those were the categories.
Yeah.
So you believe and you behave. Mm-hmm. And the bridge between the two is called shame. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any other way to construe what faith was, then you believe the right things, you avoid all these other things, and that's just what it is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad to have grown beyond that. But at that time, I was very much interested in money and in girls, at that point, women, and very interested in achieving. I've always been an achiever. And so, yeah, I was promoted in a couple of times my first year, and I got a territory that included the church that my boss had been teaching Sunday school at for years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he gives me this territory as a promotion. And then he says, "Hey, I'd really like for you to take over this Sunday school class of teenage kids." Now, mind you, I'm a great pretender, and I'm smart. So I sound like I know what I'm doing. And I'm pretending. And again, I wouldn't have even noticed it this way. I would have just thought this is what Christianity is. But I'm, you know, professing and pretending like I'm a Jesus person. And so when your boss asks you to take over Sunday school class, what do you say? Yes,
yeah, of course.
So I took over. It was like, I don't know, 7-8 kids in this tiny church. And that began. Oh,
it's the kiss of death.
It is the kiss of death. And the fork in the road was one
week. That's awesome.
I was offered a job to be the very first youth pastor at this church for $17,000 a year, I think. And I had also received an offer to be a bond trader on the floor of a $21 billion bank, making six figures at, you know, 23 or 24.
Yeah. That's a big fork in the road.
That is a fork in the road. And so I was like, well, that's kind of a no-brainer. So I began looking at Jeeps and I wanted a boat and, and then I just kind of like the night before I had to decide, and I don't remember all the specifics, but I remember I was listening to grunge music and I was praying and I was saying, God, do you have an opinion on this?
Wait, I just want to note that you were listening to grunge music and praying.
Oh, absolutely. I still, people would be horrified to know how much sermon preparation is done by rock and roll. But anyway, it is so there was a, like, I just remember that there was a thunderbolt in my soul and not a voice, not a, you know, appearing, but there was this, it was an earthquake. It was literally a thundering in my soul of, you cannot serve both God and money.
Dang.
And it's not like I was a big memorizer of the Bible or anything, but that's straight from the lips of Jesus. And it was devastating in its accuracy. And so I began to weep, but to my surprise, there were tears of joy. And so I went in, I turned down the job and became this youth pastor. And that is the beginning of what does it really mean to follow Jesus? Because I had no idea what it is to be a pastor. And so this little bitty church that you would look at and think, oh, nothing special about this church, nurtured as if I were in a womb, this reckless, weird, overly intellectual faith of mine into something that led to grad school and then, you know, pastoring.
It's so interesting that you point out that, like, you went into the job of pastoring with such a, I mean, in your words, shallow or youthful faith.
Right.
And like, you didn't have it all figured out. You didn't have, you weren't the expert in the room. And you stepped into this, like, I mean, it's kind of like how I said earlier about me, like, it's on the job training, but not only that for the job, but like how formative it became for your faith to just step in and serve, like step in and start living out what God has for you in process, not post having it all nailed.
Right. Exactly.
That's good.
The thing I realized looking back is I was a great performer. Mm-hmm. And so I could always look more mature than I was.
Yeah.
But how
is that different than fake it till you make it?
True. Absolutely. But this church, I mean, like, that's why I've never given up on the church, even though it's a freaking mess. And even though it's just full of craziness and petty and whatever, when it's good and honest, the power that sucker has to shape somebody. I was in it. I was able to start confessing things and integrating life. And it took me, and it's still taking me, years and years and years, but what a place from which to begin. Mm-hmm. A kid that didn't want to be there. I'd sworn I would never be a pastor because I saw one of the big earth-shattering things in my college years was that I found out my pastor plagiarized all of his sermons. So I had been reading a book at college, and then I show up to church, and this guy is literally reading a chapter from the book.
Wow.
I had just been reading, and I call him on it. And he says, oh, don't worry about it. Everyone does this. And then both he and the senior pastor get fired because they had been waiting. They would wait for the tapes from like Willow Creek or somewhere and then preach whatever sermons they got. They would have to call, you know, Willow Creek, I think it was, and beg them to make sure the sermons would come.
That's
or else they had nothing to share.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa. So I go from that experience to then just immersed in this world of older people and kindness and grace and screwing up and consequences, but more grace, and to love it on these kids who are just as squirrely and weird as I was. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the gift that community was, it just can't be overstated. So it also opened me up as I became more integrated to have a different place from which to doubt. Mm-hmm. So the doubting in college, it was an external, like, oh man, this feels big and scary.
Yeah, not everyone believes the same as me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Here, it was... I met people who were intellectually curious and were still Jesus followers. Mm-hmm. I met people that didn't toe the standard evangelical lines about women in leadership
here or being spiritual where, gifts. Where is this that you're talking about?
This church,
the little church.
Yeah. This, okay. The little, so there was a shift somewhere along the way, and now the doubting's from inside.
If you enjoyed today's episode, we would love it if you would share a screenshot of this episode to your Instagram story and tag us at journey_TN. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcasting app.